Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 52 of the Pico Sorelli podcast. I had to look at the notes there. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we are going to be talking about how covenants have played out so far about... Is it really 2 months into the expansion? No, one month.
About a month and a half.
Raid opened a month ago.
Yeah.
Which is really the important thing for us.
Yep.
So yeah. But before we get into that, we had some stuff happen this week that we want to talk about.
Yeah, we actually had a lot. It's funny. I started putting this together. And I was like, this will probably be a quick week, but there's actually a lot of things that happened, and I'll try and sort of group it together in sort of a couple of sections. So, so earlier this week, Ian had an interview with Forbes. And there was a couple of things that came out of that interview, based on some of his comments and things like that. So, two of the big things that happened was, number one, they asked a couple of questions around like the reward structure. Basically comparing PvP to Mythic Plus to raiding. Ian basically mentioned like they think the PvP reward structure is great. And they think they potentially need to make some tweaks to raiding and Mythic Plus, which is, I mean, we talked about this, we had a whole episode on it. That was last week, right?
Yeah.
Where we talked through like essentially today PvPing is probably the best way to gear, to essentially fill in holes for any gear you might not get from like maybe a Mythic Zero swoop. On a newly leveled character or something like that. So sounds like at least they're looking at it, realizing potential issues. But so that's being discussed internally. So maybe some changes, maybe not.
Do you think it is interesting to know? It sounds like they are happy with the PvP gearing, which means that our fears that they would go, oh, PvP gearing is too good, let's neuter it. Probably not going to come to pass, and we will instead be looking more at the PvE gearing system. In particular, I think probably Mythic Plus getting improved.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, hopefully we'll see something, maybe like one additional item, or maybe a less restrictive, or more items for like higher key, like plus keying or whatever it's called, like plusing it, right?
Yeah.
More to come on that one. Then the other big bombshell, not bombshell, but the other big point was there was a comment made that it's looking like a late spring release of 9.1. So it was sort of a passing comment about like what is upcoming and, that they're excited for 9.1 coming, in late spring. So essentially that puts that in like the April, May type timeframe in terms of release of 9.1 potentially, which is fun. Because that means PTR soon, which is fun.
PTR soon-ish, but it also, like, that's in line with their typical release schedule, maybe a little bit on the long side for a first tier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Legion had, I don't remember the name of the raid, but Hell Yeah, they came out after Emerald Nightmare to tide people over until 8.1 came out with Nighthold.
Right.
Or not 8.1, 7.1 came out with Nighthold. We're not going to have any, as far as we know, there is no Hell Yeah style mini raid coming out between now and then, which means that once people clear, in another month, a lot of guilds will be done with Castle Nathria. Obviously, a lot already are, but way, way, way more are going to be done in a month. At that point, it's going to be farm for, in a month, it's middle of February for another 2+ months.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be, it does seem a little bit long, but it also, to be fair, kind of seems like a short amount of time given the number of bosses left and what we've seen pull count wise and some of the later ones, particularly like Legion or Stone Legion Generals and stuff like that. So
We're probably going to do a whole episode on that boss once once we're done progging it, because I've heard some horror stories and it makes me think we're going to want to talk about it.
Oh, so get last. So a little bit of an aside as we step back here real quick, but I figured out how to dodge Wicked Blade. Oh. You just run back to the group as it's casting and it misses you. Because that's what happened to me randomly last week when we were doing it in Heroic. I just like ran out and then like started running back in thinking it hit me and it never hit me and then just went to the next target. So I never got the bleed on me. It was very, very weird. So
I don't know if I'd trust that. It sounds like a great way to cleave the entire group.
I would not trust that at all. But yeah, that fight is still buggy as all hell.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no. Yeah, so it looks like, I mean, kind of an idea of potentially when we get a release. I mean, to be fair, this is super speculative. You know, it wasn't anything made or said like in, it wasn't like Ian came out and said, yes, we are releasing it at this date. It was more of just like, we're excited about late spring, new content. So, you know, that's sort of the Ian piece.
Yeah. I gotta say, I am way less excited about 9.1 than I am about potential gearing changes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That seems like the more exciting portion of the updates for sure.
Like, to put this in perspective, I realized that I can get a PvP one-hander next week and upgrade it to Island Level 213 with Conquest possibly 220 if I get all the way to 1800.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can do that, then I can just replace my Denathrius weapon.
Yeah.
With an Honor weapon and a Conquest weapon.
Yeah.
And get like a 4 or 5% DPS upgrade.
Yeah, I mean it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So that's how I'm gearing my paladin pretty much exclusively. So yeah, it's not a bad way to gain some gear for sure. So yeah, so now we have so two other updates. And I guess in the Forbes, you know, go and head over to, you know, Wowhead has a couple of excerpts from it, but also you can head over to the interview actually on Forbes and read through it.
Yeah.
Probably a couple other things there that are interesting. So next up are two sort of more like overall WoW things or Blizzard things. So first up is they've officially launched the new Blizzard launcher 2.0 or Battle.net 2.0 launcher, I guess is what they're referring it to as.
It hasn't pushed the update to me yet. I still have the old one. Maybe it's just I haven't restarted it yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that was officially launched. It was said it was going live over the weekend, probably slowly rolling out to you.
Yeah.
I've been running it as beta for a while.
Yeah, I used the beta one. The beta one briefly broke for me, so I switched back, and I never switched back to the beta, but it was fine.
Yeah, it's just
I just hit the play button anyway, so.
The play button looks nicer. It's a flat, so like kind of button look. It's, I mean, yeah, but other than that, new launcher. The social stuff's kind of interesting. It's been nice to use that to sort of talk to people outside of the game. But other than that, same old launcher, just get your games, things like that. And the other update was that a bunch of people have been banned for the unlimited Stygia farming.
Yeah.
So there was a almost akin to the Destiny loot cave. If you ever played that game from Destiny 1, yeah. There was a cave where mobs would continually respawn pretty much instantly and they dropped Stygia. So you could sit there for essentially hours on end and farm unlimited Stygia. And
they also did not give progress on the Eye of the Jailer, so you could literally stay there because Stygia gain turns off when you hit Ma 5 or I 5, whatever you call it, when you hit the max. Yeah. Because they didn't give progress on that, you could just sit there and do it forever.
Oh yeah,
and it was never actually have to leave.
Yeah, so it was awesome, and the actual punishments doled out were, you know, a mix between 1 and 7 day bans, I'm assuming, for basically how much you exploited this, along with conduit level decreases.
Yeah.
So you basically lost conduit levels, conduit ranks.
That's the big one, because people might remember there is a similar situation in Legion. There is a world quest that was bugged that you could just turn in over and over and over again for artifact power. And they banned people for like 3 days, but they didn't take away any of their progress. So they were still way ahead of anybody that didn't exploit.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is an improvement. And a lot of people think of Stygia as like primarily a way to get sockets. But for a lot of classes, it's actually also the only way to get high eye level versions of your conduits. If your conduits drop from dungeons, you have two options to get them at a high eye level. You get them from your Great Vault, or you get them from the Stygia vendor that sells a random one, basically upgrades your lowest eye level conduit. So like for me, Walk with the Ox drops from Sanguine Depths. Yeah, Sanguine Depths.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that if I want to get a version of it that is higher than, I think you can only get a 200 even from Mythic Plus, to get a higher level one, at least than what Mythic Plus can drop, you have to get it from your Great Vault. In order to get a 226 one, I will need to get it from the Great Vault, or I will need to get it from the Stygia Vendor.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an
awful That's why they went with the conduit downgrades, is instead of trying to remove sockets.
Right. Yeah. The actual way to do this, too, is actually very, very awful. I don't know if you've tried to upgrade your lowest conduit yet with Stygia, but...
I am not even high enough rep for that. I've given up on them all. I'm never going to actually get it.
So the way it actually works is you can't just buy a bunch of items and then turn them on. You have to literally buy one, use it.
Go to the forge, use it, go back to Venari, buy another one, open it, go learn it at the forge, come back.
It's awful. It's absolutely one of the most
frustrating things. I'm going to pay a warlock and a couple of other random people to stand there and summon me on each end. Summon
you back and forth, yeah. Yeah, that's the way you have to do it, so... but yeah, so those folks all lost, you know, conduit levels, got bans, you know, and it's funny too, because as it's happening, like, I'm literally in Discord with like some people who either work at Blizzard or work around folks who work with Blizzard. And like, it's literally like, don't do this. Like, that was the messaging. Like, they're literally tracking who it is as it's happening. Like, just don't do it. So they got their punishment doled out. So cool. Now, in-game events that started this week. Number one was we got the Torghast Beasts of Prodigium, which is, I guess, a weekly Torghast thing.
Done Torghast this week?
I have, yeah. The beasts are fun. There are a couple of interesting builds you can do with these things. And there's four different ones. There's like a tanking one. There's like just a DPS one. There's one that does AoE damage and silences.
Yeah, that's the one that I use. And that one is actually... from what I've been hearing, the only one that's really like good, good as in pick it good.
Yeah.
The other ones you kind of pick if there's no other power there, or, you know, I heard some people say, you know, maybe you shouldn't even pick one at all, because if you don't pick one, then you can't get the upgrade powers to them later.
Right.
Which removes those powers from your pool, basically. And so it's almost worth picking a do nothing power than picking a bad pet.
Right.
Which is really backwards, but the AoE silence one was good.
Yeah. And the pep powers are fun too. Like, I don't know if I got the one, I got a couple, like two on one of my runs, I got like two or three of the one where anytime you're in combat, the beast's health slowly drops down. And then when it reaches like the trigger threshold, it explodes for AoE damage.
Yeah.
Which is actually becomes a fairly good, you know, AoE damage.
I got that, but it was more DPS for me to cast Vivify on it with Corrosive Dosage than it was to wait for it to explode. So I just used it as a second Vivify target.
Oh, okay.
So it works. Low key, they're actually like, if you get multiple stacks of Corrosive Dosage, you should just take a pet just because they will give you. If you're solo, they will double your Corrosive Dosage damage all the time because you can't. The way Corrosive Dosage works is you get a buff that has, I think, four ticks. And if you just cast on yourself repeatedly, you clip it. You lose two of the ticks. It's like five ticks, I guess. Two ticks. If you cast it on yourself, then on the pet, then on yourself, you get full damage from both.
Yeah.
So it's better to have a second target.
No, yeah. It's, yeah, they're real fun for that. And then, it's an interesting concept for like a new way to play Torghast is like with pets.
I had no idea they were doing these weekly events either.
That's what, so now I also did not realize this. And I don't know what the other ones are, if we even know. I meant to read before we got into this and I didn't.
Yeah, I don't think we know.
Yeah.
Maybe they talked about, I know they talked about doing periodic events. In the lead up to Shadowlands, I don't think we got anything concrete like, weekly events starting on this day.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what else they have in store. It kind of keeps Torghast a little bit fresh without really changing the underlying structure or anything like that. So
it gives you new powers to try out.
Yeah. It's a very simple one, so
yeah, it's fun. Like, I definitely, the run I did, I took the pet powers over powers I probably shouldn't have skipped.
Yeah, I did too.
Just to try it out.
Yeah.
And like, I only did 2 Torghast runs this week on my monk. I need to do 2 more on another character, but I mean, I actually probably will play around with the pets more on that character because it's my paladin and there's only 1 paladin build and it's really, really boring at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, no, that it was definitely, it was fun to sort of mess around with that. We'll see what else they have, because I mean, that's a very easy way of introducing something fairly simple, right? But it's new powers, you know, new stuff to interact in Torghast with. So that was cool. And then we also got the final week of your Covenant campaigns, if you hadn't changed, I guess. Well, I guess it wouldn't matter. You could catch up anyway. Well, so yeah, final.
It takes time. I changed. I have all of the Covenant campaign steps unlocked, as in like I could go if I just went right now and I did a bunch of questing, I could go all the way to the end. I'm high enough renown level to do that. I have 2 more campaign chapters before I actually get to the final chapter.
Nice. Which Covenant did you pick again?
I switched to Kyrian.
Okay.
And we'll talk more about why later.
We will. I'm excited. Yeah, so I actually did the final Kyrian campaign. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't understand the lore. You guys know I don't understand the lore. Like, people were there. We killed some people. But yeah, final week of the campaign story-wise. So I'll probably do what I normally do about stuff like this is watch a video that sort of explains to me what happened. And maybe like what I'll actually do in that YouTube video is probably watch the beginning, skip the middle, and watch the end. So I'll get all the real important parts. It'll be interesting to
find out about the minor lore characters that show up in the middle of it.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Milhouse Manastorm and Maleficent Manastorm.
Brother and sister, the duo.
Famous brother and sister, yes.
Oh my god, I'm never gonna live that down. Oh, I'm so glad. That was, if you're story nerds, not nerds, but if you like the story and WoW, you get the sort of final conclusion this week. Yeah. So
I will say, thus far, I've been very unimpressed with the Kyrian story. Like, I had finished 8 of the Night Fae chapters before switching, and the Night Fae story was so much better. Like, the Kyrian story is just a bunch of, this week we're going to go collect this MacGuffin.
Yeah, but so, okay, but they need to rebuild the scene. No.
They're MacGuffins, okay?
But no, they need to
they are literally anything.
No, they are
literally
Maldrakis.
Anything.
Something from Venthyr land, Revendreth, and it's something. It's like a heart, a something, and then we kill something in Nightfae land.
Things that were also, I will say, conspicuously absent from the first thing that got destroyed. Did you notice that?
I did. I don't, there's probably a reasoning why they needed to like put it together. It probably was like, oh, it's because it broke. We need to like re-empower it. So like they needed items to like, you know what I mean? Like a little jump start. Like you can't just like, when your alternator is bad, you can't just start your car. You got to jump it. That's like,
yeah,
you know, they didn't have like the stored power.
I did the Night Fae chapter of my Kyrian campaign this week, and I was like, wow, really wish I were still Night Fae.
Yeah, yeah, I skipped through that. I didn't realize you killed somebody. So, like damn. The McMuffin blueberry person died.
Spoilers, but yeah.
Sorry, my bad. Well, I mean, like, look.
I did that. I did that already, but yeah.
My fault.
It's all your fault.
I died. To be fair, I didn't even realize I did it. Skip that cutscene. Easy. But yeah, final week of the campaign, story wraps up. We'll see where we go from here. I know that I follow, I don't know if you remember, red shirt guy or Ian Bates. He's the red shirt dude who asked that question.
The red shirt dude
The Wildhammer clan.
The Wildhammer clan.
Yeah.
And way back in Cataclysm.
Yeah. Yeah, but he tweeted out
the guys on stage. That was fantastic.
It was a very good question. But he tweeted out like his thoughts of who like the fourth, if we get a fourth Soulbind, who they're going to be for each covenant. So
yeah,
he had an interesting take there. So go look that up. But cool, yeah. Final story's done now. We move on. Next up, I'm going to actually flip the order here in the notes. Next up, Future Guild. So the Guild Future, which was started by and really run by Slootbag, you know, pretty big streamer, a really big streamer in terms of WoW content, and a bunch of other folks. They have called it quits. So basically, the guild essentially will be stopping raiding.
They killed Denathrius already, right?
No, they were progressing on Stone Legion, I want to say. They had Sludgefist. Oh. Actually, why am I saying I'm guessing? I have this open. Yeah, they had Sludgefist down. They're progressing on Stone Legion.
Stone Legion, like I said, we're going to do an episode on Stone Legion.
Yeah.
But yeah, sad to hear. Not going to speculate on why, because I don't know any of the people on that team personally.
Mm-hmm.
But they were one of the first teams that really streamed like Mythic progression anywhere close to the top level. When they were doing it in what, Tomb of Sargeras?
Yeah, they started in Tomb, and it was sort of, I mean, the guild was built out of the breakup of Serenity, right? So like, when Serenity broke off from Method at the start of Legion, or really after, what was it, WoD into Legion, right?
Yeah.
You know, Slootbag transferred over, started playing on EU, and then Future came out of that with like him and Nagura sort of starting the guild together. Two pretty big streamers in like the WoW content area. And it was cool. I mean, it was like, what, they were top 20 a lot of their time. So
yeah,
being able to see that sort of progression, you know, as it was happening, as guilds go through it, you know, was interesting. But yeah, sucks to see them go. Really, really good. I mean, all in all, seemed like a great bunch of guys. So and folks. So
yeah.
That one sucks.
Guilds dying sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it is what it is at that point. So cool. So then the final news here, which probably hits closer to home for both of us than most other people, but WoW Analyzer. So that's sort of the site that you can plug your logs in, tells you based on your spec what you did and didn't do right or wrong. I mean, you and I, Emilson, both have contributed, you know, you to the Brewmaster and probably other modules, me to primarily just the Mistweaver module. But Zero, sort of the lead, the person who started it, basically put in a paywall to limit access to the timeline function, which, if you guys aren't familiar, the timeline function essentially allowed you to see, like, literally row by row or second by second what you were casting. So it was very helpful in terms of, like, being able to see your opener or maybe seeing what you were casting in terms of, like, you know, cooldowns and things like that. And it showed you everything. It showed you what was on cooldown, what was off cooldown, important casts, you know, things like that. So it was very helpful. I mean, it was a very clean way to see an easy to see opener, like, hey, at this point in time when you're supposed to do priority DPS, what was this person doing? Or, you know, under healing cooldowns, what were you casting? So this was moved to a premium only feature, which essentially means you either need to contribute, which is free other than your time, to the to WoW Analyzer in terms of like GitHub PRs and things like that, or you need to be a Patreon to gain access to it. So
this is what the timeline looks like and what the paywall looks like. That's a fun bug. We have a lot more information on this than the Warcraft logs timeline does. So I have a premium because I work on this thing. So
aren't you special?
I can go here and I can see the full timeline. And there's other things, like, it's not just like we have ability cooldowns, but we also have things like, you know, I cast Tiger Palm while I could have cast Chi Wave, and that's bad because I should cast literally anything over Tiger Palm.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, Blackout Kick, that's really bad. So, like, there's a bunch of stuff in here that is better than just what Warcraft logs does. Right. But this is also, like, the timeline is, it takes so much of the other information that we put into this, all of the cooldown tracking. Like, Brewmaster has a lot of cooldown reduction. So if I look at, for example, Invoke Niazhao with Walk with the Ox, that has a bunch of cooldown reduction on it. So you can see there's this big gap between when it came off cooldown and when I cast it again. Stuff like that, that is really difficult to suss out from just looking at the Warcraft logs timeline that doesn't do that kind of cooldown tracking. But for good reason. It's very time intensive to implement that. But I'm curious what you have to say about this.
So yeah, I mean, so this has been talked, like, so for full transparency, I mean, Zero has brought this up before in terms of just
repeatedly.
Yeah. It's not a new thing. Yeah. It's not a new thing. Like, oh man, you know, he went and did it. I think the new thing is that he went and did it without any real warning. Right. You know, it was sort of a discussion about, you know, potentially what can be moved to more premium sort of only features just to continue to fund sort of development, right? Like, you know, there is a lot of stuff that goes on in WoW Analyzer, like beyond just server costs, right? Like as a contributor, you know, you at a certain point will, you know, Zero will use some of the funds from Patreon to give you money to pay for your WoW subscription, right? So you can continue to play the game.
And that's something that happens right now. If you maintain a spec, you get your WoW sub covered.
Yeah, which is like, that's great for people who want to maintain it because you're not quitting your job, right? And we'll say we're not like,
does not cut it.
Yeah, but it's more than just like either going directly into his pocket or just server costs or some exorbitant amount of money, right? Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, paywalls in general, I am perfectly okay with. My feelings here is that like, I don't agree with taking a previous feature that was free or at least open to everyone and moving it behind a paywall. Yeah. I would have liked to seen something new be worked on and released and that be a premium feature. I think that's my only issue with this is that essentially you take something away from the community that they're at least used to using and now requiring some sort of payment for it, which in my mind is backwards. Like I get that everybody's time has a value, right? And you know, a lot of this we do, and all of this we do really is a hobby, right? We're not getting paid to do any of this. So I understand that aspect of like, hey, I still need to eat, like I still need to pay rent and things like that. But the idea of taking something that was like previously free, that was very, I mean, I will tell you that I did not use it much, but I know that like Windwalkers use it a ton. Some of the feedback I've heard, like a lot of DPS classes loved it because you could see ability, you know, breakdowns, things like that. Yeah. So.
And that's something that I think surprised Zero as well, is the number of people that came to the WoW Analyzer Discord after that went live and were like, hey, why is this the case? I was using the timeline a lot, and he thought it was more like this minor feature that people sometimes use, which it sounds like, I mean, I can imagine it for healer being something like occasionally used, but with a lot of the DPS specs, they have metadata all over the spells that get cast. And it's like, here, you should have cast this here. This was a bad cast. This was an inefficient cast. You know, all of this stuff. Like, I have a little bit of it in the Brewmaster stuff with Tiger Palm.
Yeah.
But some specs have a lot more than that.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think that, I mean, regardless of its usage, I mean, even if it was a minorly used thing, I just don't agree with taking things away and taking things away without any sort of notice to, like,
I think it feels
worse.
I think that was the biggest thing for me is like, I started raid on Friday and then like partway through raid, I heard the news that and so the way things normally work for WoW Analyzer and most, you know, software projects is you, submit your code to be reviewed before it goes live. And Zero doesn't do that. He owns the project. So it's no surprise that he sent it straight to production, but it went straight from like his brain to production with nobody else having any immediate say in like, hey, wait, I think we should implement this differently. Or hey, wait, I disagree with this, which definitely rubbed some of the developers the wrong way.
Yep.
So we have had a couple of people, you know, say they're not going to continue working on the project. Abelito, regular on the show. I guess he's not a regular, but friend of the show, Abelito, has decided he's going to part ways with it. And he was maintaining a lot of specs. So
yeah, I think he had some of like 4 specs. So five. Yeah. So I mean,
I don't know where he found the time, but
Well, when you're, I know where he. Well, we won't get into Abbey. And I think like the individual who supports Hunters did a similar thing, right? So yeah, I mean, that's, I'm not going to get into their decisions, right? That's what they want to do. It's fine. But, yeah. I mean, for me, it sucks more from the point of view of like the fact that it happened out of the blue versus yeah. like, I mean, I understand putting things behind a paywall. Like I get that. Like not everything is free, even though I grew up on an internet that thought everything was free. Right. Like I grew up when like paying for anything was sort of a no-no in terms of like,
yeah.
you know, media content, everything. Right. So, but yeah, I mean,
sorry. I'm right there with you. I think that was really the biggest mistake here is just that, you know, there wasn't a, here's this pull request. Let's go through it. It exactly. was like, oh, it's live on the Friday evening. And for better or worse, a lot of people like Putro, who does Hunters, and like Abe, who does everything, they're the primary point of feedback for stuff with wire analyzers. So when that switch flipped, suddenly Putro's, you know, fielding questions about why the paywall is there.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, he's kind of in your boat as well of, as I understand it, of like, we shouldn't take away existing features and paywall them, which is one I'll say I agree with as well.
Yeah.
But to have to then, you know, turn around and go, I can't do anything about it, sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it definitely doesn't, it's not great, doesn't feel great, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it's Zero's project, right? Like ultimately, like a bunch of people contribute their time to help support it and things like that. But yeah. you know, he's sort of like the lead; he's in the driver's seat. So
yeah, I mean, this isn't something either where he's been like absent or whatever. He doesn't do. I don't even think he plays WoW anymore. Or at least for a lot of BFA, he didn't.
Yeah.
But if you look at the amount of time that different people have put into the project, even just over the past year, like. He's still clearly one of the top contributors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and his focus nowadays is much more on the core, right? So much yeah. more on like how everything ticks and ties together. I mean, not to get into like the architecture of WoW Analyzer, but there's a lot of things that happen before you get to maintaining a spec, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, and maintaining a spec is probably one of the easiest things you can do. So,
there's a few yeah. things that are really annoying and hard, but.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just, you know, grunt work.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, sucks is what it is, but we'll see what yeah. happens next. I mean, ultimately, like, here's the thing that comes out of this, right, is I think a couple of people said, like, saw some tweets about, like, don't pull a Nagi or, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With reference to that. This is like, slightly different than that, and I think
I would say more than slightly. Like Nagi's thing, he basically like the add-on did not function. MDT yeah. did not function after he pulled the data out of it. Right. The add-on was dead. This is very different because all of the functionality is still there, except for the timeline, which is one piece of the functionality that's there. But you still get the checklist, the suggestions. All of the mm-hmm. stats. I've been putting charts in my stats and stuff like that. And stuff like I've got the stagger chart that's on there for Brewmasters, stuff, the Celestial Fortune analysis, all of that mm-hmm. is still there. And that's for me most of what I use. The timeline is really like tertiary for me.
Right.
And yeah, this is not even in the same ballpark.
No. But I mean, the reason I just bring that up is I don't think that this gets turned around. Was the point I was making is that if there was to be a backtrack on like WoW Premium for timeline, then WoW Premium dies, or WoW Analyzer Premium dies, because there's no like if he rocks this back from a community perspective, you know, from a community pushback piece, like. The next feature doesn't matter because the idea of paying anything for WoW Analyzer sort of dies with this.
I disagree presented. With that. If we look at something like, you know, Warcraft logs, all of the features are available to the public. Same with raid bots. The only thing that's gated is like Warcraft logs won't store your logs forever,
mm-hmm.
which who cares, honestly. And Warcraft logs shows ads. And that's like, that's the big, and the ads on Warcraft logs are actually really annoying. I hate them.
Yep.
And then there's also like the processing queue on Warcraft. And on the raid bots, you pay for extra CPU time.
Right.
WoW Analyzer, all the processing or most of the processing is done in your browser.
Yeah.
Which is great for cutting down CPU costs on our end.
Yep.
But that does mean that there's not something super clear cut for us to be like paid to get this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, I mean, that was ultimately the thing with me is that like from a feature perspective, what becomes a premium feature? And I don't think timeline
The only thing that really makes sense if we were to say not the timeline is the eventual feature that we've been talking on and off about for the past few years of actually having comparisons to other logs.
Yeah.
It would need to be something very big.
Yeah.
I think you do have a point there. Like if he backs off on the timeline, it has to be a very big feature.
Right.
It can't be just like another small feature.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see what transpires. It sounds like he's pretty, I mean, Zero's always in the years that I've known him sort of working on WoW Analyzer together, he's normally pretty set in his ways in terms of like making a decision and sticking to it. So
yes.
We'll see how this goes. So, but yeah, so that is timeline paywalled on WoW Analyzer. Yay. and that's, I mean, par for the course, 40 minutes in to the podcast or half hour in, we are done with what happened last week and get to talk about the topic now.
Unless you have anything. Our topic for today is not at all like fraught with complexity and minutia and subtlety or anything like that. It's totally straightforward, nothing confusing at all. No way this could possibly go wrong.
No way I'm gonna be here till 3 a.m. recording this with you.
So let's talk about covenants.
Yes.
So we did a covenant episode, at least one, before the expansion launched to talk about the state of different covenants and how they looked for monks in each spec. And Anom, you went back through that episode.
I did.
Anything you want to bring up?
Yeah, so it's funny. So I actually, it was the August 8th episode. I think it was like 29 or something like that, or 30. Okay. One of the first ones we did.
Yeah.
And I re-listened to most of it. And it's funny, at the time for Mistweavers, at least, like Kyrian was hands down the best. I think for Brewmasters.
At that point, actually, the Kyrian one was bugged for Mistweaver though, right?
It was still very much like overpowered, right? They had made, I think, one or two slight adjustments to it, but they hadn't brought the hammer down on it just yet.
Yeah.
I think there were still a lot of bugged ones. And I think at the time, maybe Brewmaster, you were mentioning like Venthyr was potentially going to be the play. Yeah, but if they fix the bugs, you're like, it could be good. And like Windwalker was in a similar boat about like their covenants, but the overall like feeling was that everything was really bugged and nothing worked, and we had no idea what was good.
Yep.
So it was like, it was at that point too, like Bone Dust Brew was still procking like gusts of mist, even if you weren't like Bone a Mistweaver.
Like Brewmasters could have permanent Bone Dust Brew up. Like it could just be up for literally forever.
Yeah.
Because of how it interacts with our Brew CDR. So there was a lot of really, really broken stuff happening at that point in time. And so I think things have changed since then. But how about what we put in the guides?
Yeah. So we so the launch guides were interesting in that it sort of came 360. So it's funny, I do want to bring up one other episode. We did our launch hype special, basically the episode right before launch. And it was like me, you, Mickey, Abe were on it. And we did a round table on that one about what we were picking. Do you remember what you said you were going to pick?
I said I was going to pick Night Fae.
Yep. And do you remember what you said about Kyrian?
I would never go.
Yeah, he would never do it. Never go. So like at the time, like I was going Kirin, you were going Night Fae. I think Mickey was going Night Fae, and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, from the initial guide stuff, I basically wrote in from a Mistweaver perspective that basically everything about Venthyr was playable. Like yeah. Night Fae was playable.
And that's what I put on the Brewmaster guide as well, is yeah. everything but Venthyr. And I think technically the Windwalker one also says that, but I think it's become more clear that for Windwalker, the right choice is Kirin.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So that was sort of our pre-launch idea that they were all, you know, other than Venthyr lagging behind pretty much across the board for monks, every other, you know, covenant was essentially playable, right? Like you could pick it up, you could run with it, it would work fairly well. Yeah. So yeah, I mean that was a situation which I feel like we sort of hedged our bets a little bit in terms of like, not one's just bad, just pick one of these three. Like one of these three will probably appeal to you and you'll want to play it. So
yeah. Yeah. Saying basically don't pick that one, but the other three are good is fairly yeah. safe. It doesn't leave a lot of people feeling super bad. That you know they wanted to be a necro monk and now right. they can't. And I stand by that. The guides still say for Brewmaster, you know, you can pick any of these three.
Yep.
And I do believe that is still correct, especially as we get higher up in renown, which is an extra yep. layer of complexity that's on top of this. Night Fae gains so much damage from the Burrs trait in Nia's Soulbind
mm-hmm.
that, so this is kind of connected to why I did pick Night Fae. I started at Night Fae. I switched to Kirin last week. Okay. And there were two reasons for it.
Ooh.
There were two reasons for it. Okay.
Was one of them you were wrong?
No. You're going to laugh, though. You're going to fucking laugh about the second one.
Okay.
So the first one is that without Burrs, in my current gear, Night Fae was about 5% behind in damage from Kirin. And like that by itself was not enough to make me switch. I knew that was going to be the case, that Night Fae was going to be a little bit behind Kirin until we got Nia fully unlocked,
mm-hmm.
which yep. happens in about 4 weeks from now, I want to say.
Okay.
So there was that. Then the second thing is that Night Fae is trash for Windwalker arenas. It is so bad for Windwalker arenas.
It no,
is no,
you didn't.
Bad.
You didn't switch because of PvP.
I switched because of PvP.
Oh my god!
I literally switched because of PvP. Because so Windwalker Kirin has so much more burst.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just unbelievable. Like I was doing them as Night Fae, and like you can't really stand in your Fae line in PvP anyway, so you're never getting resets. It's like this extra button that does like a blackout kick's worth of damage. Yeah. And like the big thing with it is that it AoEs, but like nobody's like, you might AoE like two people.
Right.
It's not all that great. It's a little bit more sustained damage, but Windwalker's sustained damage is already pretty good.
Yep.
And it just wasn't, it's just not good in PvP for Windwalkers.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
And I switched to Kirin and it was just a night and day difference. Like I would go in and you hit Zuin, Weapons of Order, and SEF, not necessarily in that order, and your on use trinket.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kill people. They just die.
Just cleave them. That's hilarious.
Like they just die. It is fantastic. And that was really the big thing, is I was trying to PvP for gear and I was like, my covenant is literally useless. Like pod tender's useless. Nobody lets that thing live.
Yeah.
The other traits, like the slow one, especially the slow one, got fixed. So you can no longer give people a 90% slow that they can't remove. And the conduits aren't great by themselves. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm giving up a huge amount of damage by switching. It's just like I was getting literally nothing from my covenant in PvP, and I was like, my main source of gear right now is PvP. I want to make this easier.
Right, yeah.
And that was ultimately the big thing. If it were just the like being slightly behind in damage, I mean, I would have toughed it out for a month and then been Night Phase ahead in Sims in 4 weeks. So
right, yeah.
And yeah, obviously Sims versus reality and all that fun stuff. But yeah, I do that. That is really what was the nail in the coffin for me, man, was PvP.
PvP. I can't believe you left your Night Fae brethren.
I'm still not happy about it.
To join the Kyrian, a covenant you said you would never join.
Oh, weapons of order is hot trash. I hate that button.
I hate it too. So it's
actually fun for Windwalker. I do like it as Windwalker. It still feels bad to like press a button and nothing happens, but yeah. It's the way it works for Windwalker, I do think is actually pretty fun.
Nice.
It's way more, it changes your rotation pretty substantially for the duration.
Yeah.
So that's good. One of the other things, and this is like more minor, but on the subject of like things we got wrong about Covenants, it turned out to be a lot harder than expected to fit Feline Stomp resets in particular into the Brewmaster rotation.
Yeah.
In theory, it's just, you know, oh, skip a Tiger Palm. But between that and the Charred Passions Legendary, that wants you to replace your Tiger Palms Spinning Crane Kick.
What was that legendary name again?
Charred Passions, yeah. Yeah, I said it.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
That was awesome in that episode, by the way.
Yeah.
You pleaded with Hamlet to change the name.
Oh, it's still a bad name.
Yes.
So that one wants you to replace your Tiger Palms with Spinning Crane Kick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like half the time. And then there's the fact that currently Chi Wave is better than Eye of the Tiger, partially because of Charred Passions, but also just partially because it's numerically a little bit better. Means that we have less free globals than ever before.
Gotcha.
Well, not ever before, but then we did in BFA. And so it's harder. It's just harder to fit those extra Feline Stomp casts in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I can't believe it. That's the...
Oh, really, it was PvP. That was the main reason.
That was the exact opposite reason. I am no longer a Kyrian as of Thursday evening. I am now a... Oh God, I can't believe I'm going to say this.
I'm a Necro Lord.
I'm a Necro Lord.
Oh my God.
I have to zone into that zone every day to pick up my calling, and it's just...
Has it made you stop doing callings yet?
No. Now I have to catch up on Renown, so I have to do them for the off chance I get the increased gap.
So what's so special about Necrolord?
So when we talked about Necrolord at the start, so Bone Dust Brew, of course, is the Covenant ability.
Yeah.
It's fairly good in terms of like increasing healing, right? So anybody hit by it from an ally perspective, if you heal them, there's a chance that you get to like replicate the healing in sort of a Gust of Mist type fashion. So it's very good in terms of healing. However, that's not the only thing it does. There is a Soulbind, Emery, that their initial ability is every time you use Bone Dust Brew, you gain a 13%, I believe it is, intellect buff for 10 seconds.
Oh.
So our main stat buff. Yeah. So it's a very strong cooldown, very strong intellect buff on a 1 minute cooldown, which in terms of damage patterns and raids lines up very well for something like Dancing Fever on Council of Blood, the Mythigolia mechanic, or you know, the suck-ins, the Zymok, like
Annihilations.
Annihilations and things like that. So it's very much a good ability to have. And honestly, you mentioned Weapons of Order is bad on Brewmaster. It's actually became increasingly more difficult to use it as a Mistweaver. In terms of like, where do I pair it? Because if I pair it with other cooldowns, I feel like I'm over cooldowning. But then if I use it by itself, I might... It
doesn't do very much.
Like drain my mana for like, just I'm trying to cast just to cast. So
yeah
it felt bad on either side in terms of its usage. I think it's ultimately still good, particularly if you end up pairing it with like Invoke Chi-Gi, the level, what is it? Not the 50, but the one below that.
Yeah,
Talent row. So it's good with that. But ultimately, I literally doing Council of Blood, I would do pulls and not know where to cast Weapons of Order and just get angry at myself. Like,
yeah,
getting into like the final mob. So like 7 minutes in and being like, well, I casted it twice already. The first time sucked. Nobody took damage. I barely got any usage out of it. And the second time I just cast it because it was off cooldown and I didn't know what else to do with my life. Like, I had a GCD. I'll hit it. Maybe I'll use it. Maybe I won't. So yeah. It was just generally frustrating to use. And I think that was, it's funny. Like, we talk about like why we might've switched. Like you mentioned, like not enough, potentially on paper, it looked like you had the globals to use Night Fae, Feyline Stomp. Yeah. With Mistweaver, it's apparent that like from a mana usage perspective, like Mistweaver's, like we just don't have the mana recovery that we had in
BFA,
right? And we don't, like, we are potentially using more mana like to do similar healing, right? And I'm trying to dance around the fact that I don't think we have mana issues. I think it's just our mana costs seemed higher, you know, than they were leaving BFA. Yeah. So I mean, that's the biggest reason for my switch is just being frustrated, like wanting more throughput at a very specific time and not having a cooldown for it. Like, and then looking across the divide at this shitty yellow looking zone with these dumb green looking people with the perfect cooldown I can use.
Yeah.
Was like, that was like the thing that broke it for me, that I was just like, God damn it.
Yeah. And it doesn't help things either. So like, I should be clear. Like, we do actually have the globals to use Night Fae. It's just, when we get a proc, you have to look at, okay, is Blackout Kick off cooldown? Is Kick mm-hmm. Smash off cooldown? Is Rushing Jade Wind up? Is Breath of Fire off cooldown? If any of those things are true, then you ignore it.
Right.
Until all of those things are not true.
Right, yeah.
And that's what, it makes it harder. And harder means mistakes. And mistakes mean less damage. On the other hand, Weapons of Order is very straightforward to use as Brewmaster. Mm-hmm. There's really not a whole lot of thinking to it. You press it while Keg Smash is on cooldown, then you press Keg Smash, and then you just do your normal rotation. And ideally, you get Invoke Niuzhao in there, and you're actively tanking because it multiplies your damage from Invoke Niuzhao. But really, that's all. Like, it's the same kind of thing that most DPS specs do, where they want to stack their cooldowns together. But I mean, that's literally just what we want to do with it.
Right.
So it's very easy to use. It's just easier to get right. And
yeah,
that's important. It's also good numerically. Still don't like it. But it is. It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we both, just in terms of like, I mean, I think if I wasn't at the progression level I was, I think Kieran is probably I wouldn't. I would still got Necro. What am I saying? Like, as soon as I got to like these fights at the end, I just would have wanted that, both that intellect increase, right? And just like the ability to have it every minute is very strong. So
It's funny because I really miss Soul Shape. It's really? So weird to say that because like Monk has a lot of mobility, but Soul Shape basically replaced pre-setting on my Transcendence.
Gotcha.
So there's a bunch of places now that I have to actually set up my Transcendence in advance, like on Hungering Destroyer. I drag the boss out for consume and I have to then go all the way across the consume circle.
Right.
To get to the raid group. And I was using Soul Shape for that. Now I have to remember to put up Transcendence, and since I didn't prog it with having to do that, I forget and have to call for a grip because roll doesn't get you far enough.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So there's things like that, and then on Zymox, I used it as well for Annihilates. It makes those safer. And again, Transcendence is there, so I just got to use Transcendence, but Transcendence requires me to think ahead, so it was a little bit, like, it's easier to use the rotation ability, but it's harder to use the to make up for the lack of Soul Shape. Yeah. Soul Shape is just a really nice button.
That's funny.
I've missed that quite a bit. I'm looking forward to going back Night Fae in a month. And that is, nice. I might actually go back Night Fae sooner rather than later. once I get done with PvP year, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Like gotcha. if I hit 1800 this week, I'm not going to bother pushing for 2.1k. I'm just mm-hmm. like 1800. Give me my 220s.
It'll be fine. You're good. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been, yeah, that was just last week. That's funny that you did it for PvP, and I did it like just specifically for PvE. Like I don't PvP on my monk too much. So,
yeah. I mean, apparently Mistweaver is really bad in arenas right now.
Mistweaver is terrible in arenas. So yeah. It's fine. I mean, I did a couple Windwalker of RBGs. Mistweaver
is very good for the record.
Yeah.
Windus Brew also is better than Feline Stomp in PvP though for Windwalker. You can just randomly destroy people with it.
Yeah.
Like, I had someone that I lost to a Necrolord Windwalker where they just like hit Bone Dust Brew on me. And
oh, really?
they RSK'd me and yeah. It got copied. And then they did Fist of Fury and every single tick got copied. And it's just like, I guess I die.
Yeah.
So like it's that kind of thing is a little bit more luck than skill. But yeah. Bone Dust Brew can still totally, totally work in PvP. Way, way better than Feline Stomp.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was my week, my Thursday night, just being literally frustrated for 2 hours after I realized I should have been Necro for Council. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that sucked. It's fun. It's PvP, man. And I guess, I mean, we don't have a Windwalker here to talk about this, but my assumption is that Windwalkers are fine Kyrian. With Kyrian. Like, yeah.
Use Kyrian. That's, yeah. Let me actually pull up Warcraft logs real quick. So, as a testament to Brewmaster actually being okay in any of the three, if you look at the top 100 parses on literally every single fight on Mythic,
yep.
They're mostly Kyrian, admittedly, because most people want Kyrian. But there are Necrolords, there are Night Fae. All three specs are represented.
Yeah.
Or Covenants are represented for Brewmaster on every single fight. So the numbers did actually work out in practice. You can run any of them. I would not have actually switched if it weren't for PvP. But if I look at, let me pull up, for example, Enerva Darkvein, which is a DPS check boss on Mythic. And if I look at Monk Windwalker, let's see what the rankings look like.
What are we looking at here?
So 100% Invoker's Delight is a legendary. But look at all these Kyrian boys. You may not be able to see this very well on stream, but these are all the same icon, and it's all Kyrian. I have not seen... Oh, there's one. That's Necrolord.
It's a Necro?
Number 35.
Oh, Mr. Weed Eater. Shout outs. Mr.
Weed Eater.
Shout outs to Weed Eater.
Doing good shit. yep. So there is one... non-Kyrian in the top 100 on Enerva Darkvein.
That's hilarious.
So it's very much a one covenant show for Windwalker right now.
Yeah that's funny. God, yeah. I mean, I think for Windwalkers, I'm almost positive in going in, like, Kyrian was considered the go-to. Yeah.
I wasn't paying a ton of attention to it, but after they changed the Kyrian ability, I'm pretty sure that was the situation. Like, if you remember way back at that point as well, the Kyrian ability for Windwalker didn't make sense.
Yeah.
It gave you mastery and then asked you to break your mastery by casting RSK. Like,
back to back. Yeah.
So yeah. That got changed. It's now RSK decreases chi costs and Blackout Kit gives extra CDR. And also mastery, which basically functions like a kind of bloodlust effect for you. It doesn't actually give you haste, but lower chi costs mean you can cast more abilities.
Yeah.
And higher cooldown reduction means you can cast more abilities. So it functions as a small bloodlust-like window where you just cast more spells.
Gotcha. Nice, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think they nailed it. Fucking Windwalkers, man, always smart about it.
I mean, what they got wrong though is that Windwalker would be tier one.
That's true. That is true.
They got that one wrong.
Yes. Yeah. They that is true. I mean, we talked about that, right? Trill.
Yeah.
Shout outs to the greatest WoW player ever, old Trill from Limit/OTK WoW team, WoW arena team. Yeah, I mean, Trill put Windwalker on the map, which is Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, like Limit got that almost 100% right in terms of like that call. So
yeah,
in terms which spec they should
have. I definitely agree with that call.
But yeah.
I kind of wish we had a Windwalker so I could play Paladin on Prog, but
dude, our Windwalker crushes, dude. Our Windwalker's nuts.
I thought you said you didn't have a Windwalker.
We do. I mean, we found one. There's one in the raids now. He just showed up. I'm assuming we recruited him
to
play with us, but he's been there the past couple weeks. Shout out to, I think, Dangle is his name? Dangle Sack.
Did you get Dangle Sack? He used to be an OE.
Oh, did he? I didn't know. Yeah, Dangle's riding with us now.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, we got Dangle. He pumps, dude. Dude's good.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was an OE. Actually, you know what? I did. I meant to actually ping you or Babs about that.
Babs would have been the person to talk to. But yeah, because he was on the midweek team.
Gotcha. That's funny. But yeah, Dangle pumps. So, so cool. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like generally Covenant's a little bit different than we thought. Played out slightly differently, but
yeah.
I think in general we nailed it. So, I like we nailed it. Like I had anything to do with a lot of what we've done.
I mean, we were not horribly wrong. There was a period where we didn't have it in Sims that Bone Dust Brew and Weapons of Order increased damage from Invoke Niuzhau, which Invoke Niuzhau does a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And so for a time, it actually looked like I had written the guides and posted the guides and then been totally off base because of how much damage Niuzhau was doing. Then because of the fix to Niuzhau to make it do the damage it set on the tooltip, everything was fine again.
Gotcha. But
if it had actually continued doing triple damage, Night Fae would have been trash. But it did not. So.
Gotcha. That's funny. But yeah, so I mean, are the only other sort of notes I had here were just on like any sort of notable or like interesting points you've seen using your Covenant now, like whether it's in dungeons, raids, like you mentioned a little bit about how like Soul Shape was good with some, like, because I know that's one of the things we had around when we talked through Covenants was like Soul Shape for an already very mobile class, potentially not as useful, but I mean, it sounds like we found some uses for it, right?
Yeah, Soul Shape is just one of those things where any sort of movement that's longer than a single roll, it was great for, especially if you had time to dash a second time. So like on Zymox, I would use it to run out the explosions because it's a 3-second buff, which is not enough to let you dash twice, but it's tied to a 3-second cast. So you can, as soon as the cast starts, Soul Shape out, keep running, and you're already farther than the roll, then Soul Shape again and be way far away, and then transcend back, and that was great. And you could throw some rolls in there as well, you know, maybe you don't Soul Shape out immediately, you roll plus Soul Shape, or you do two rolls in Soul Shape and you get really far out. You know, there's different things you can do, and it's just Soul Shape actually just moves you really far. It's actually a great movement cooldown. So, I mentioned on Hungering Destroyer using it, like, because of how it's a teleport and it doesn't depend on your move speed, like, you roll and you immediately get sucked back, like, you Soul Shape, and because of the increased move speed, like, you can continue running against the consume on Hungering Destroyer and actually make progress. That's not something you can do with roll. So there are things that I definitely found use for it. I definitely, in Mythic Plus, was using it as an extra kiting tool. You know, doing the roll, then the roll, then the Soul Shape, then the roll, and like that. Turns out it's good, and like you throw a transcendence in there somewhere, and nothing ever touches you. And you probably lose threat at some point, but that's what rogues are for, or hunters.
But
I've actually been way less impressed with File of Serenity than I thought I would be.
I mean, having raided with it, I mean, it's great.
There's almost nothing that's relevant to me as a tank.
I mean, it's nice. It was nice progressing through like heroic Stone Legion and even Denathrius, right, to remove those bleeds. Particularly on Stone Legions, when I take a double stack or, you know, get two back to back, or, you know, sometimes even three based on like DPS timings and things like that. So, or screw ups by me and or someone in my raid. So it was nice for those situations. It's particularly early. I've used it much less since we sort of gotten those on lockdown in terms of like the heroic progression side of things. I'm assuming it would have come back if I was still Kyrian for.
It doesn't work on Stone Legion on Mythic.
Oh, on Mythic it doesn't? Okay.
It actually, like, it's in the dungeon journal that you cannot bop or... It doesn't literally list abilities, but it says this effect cannot be cleared by normal means.
Gotcha. So...
It just doesn't work on the end bosses. It does work on the early bosses. You can use it on Huntsman. You can use it on Treequig. You can use it on Sun King. But that's... Those are the bosses with relevant bleeds.
Yeah.
And two of them are the first two bosses you kill. Like, they do let us do things like we don't tank swap in phase one of Huntsman because my co-tank is a Kyrian Demon Hunter. So they take the dog that does the bleed the whole time and they reset their stacks using file. And that's nice, I guess. But it doesn't really, it's not really a factor. And it doesn't heal for enough. Like, it's worse than a health stone.
If I use
my health potion and health stone and then I need a third one, I have the five. It is better in Mythic Plus. I have not been doing a lot of Mythic Plus, but
And I can see the potentially, but didn't turn out as crazy or like, oh, this is, you know, sort of great. That was my feeling.
Lincoln's agreeing with me. File is a lot better in Mythic Plus. There's so many more debuffs that you can clear that, like, doing a Mythic Plus 15 is still reasonably difficult. We are reaching the gear point that a lot of people can actually successfully time 15s.
Mm-hmm.
They're so reasonably difficult, and so having that ability to clear it and the ability to have it reset from pole to pole instead of being once per fight is good. Not as good for raid.
No, that's for sure. Kyrian did have some interesting like dungeon buffs too, doing enough dungeons. So particularly like Spires and Necrotic Wake. Like Necrotic Wake was nice for the verse orbs that you got. Yeah. From the big hulking animatronic thingers.
That's Necrotic Wake, but yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Spires is the spears.
Yeah. Necrotic Wake also has spears, but they aren't covenant locked. The spears and spires are. Yeah.
Are, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, some interesting things there. I mean, Night Fae were the stun things in the other side. And the...
decidedly less good.
Yeah, not
as great buff than the Kyrian ones.
Yeah, and then the Tyranna Scythe.
Tyranna Scythe, you get a 10% main stat buff, and a skip at the start.
Yeah,
and also checkpoints.
Checkpoints, which I mean, the checkpoints
are very real.
Yeah, very useful.
They turn that, like, if you don't have a Night Fae and you wipe in that dungeon, you can't time it.
Yeah, it's particularly after the second boss, right?
Like, if you get through the third boss, like, and having to run through the entire instance to get back, he's dead. Like, will probably still complete it for the one piece of loot, but he's dead.
Yeah. So, yeah, those didn't turn out too crazy. Even the Venthyr ones aren't that exciting. Like, I don't even know a Venthyr monk, but I mean,
I saw one in PvP.
Oh, did you?
I saw one in PvP. I hit crazy. Ring of Peace, and all of his little Fallen Order things did nothing. Absolutely nothing. Oh, they are not immune. Good. There's like a million of them. It's like an unholy DK pressing army, except the army isn't actually very good.
That's so funny.
We did lose that match because I'm bad at PvP, but
you know, to be fair, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but the two for them, like the Halls of Atonement is that's got the gauntlet in it, right? Halls does?
Yeah. No, Halls is the one that's upstairs. Sanguine Depths is downstairs with the gauntlet.
Gotcha. So Sanguine Depths has the files that you can like activate.
Those are really good.
Yeah, but there's like the positioning requirements. I've had them sometimes not work, where like even though we kill mobs in them, we don't get the buff.
Yeah.
So that's sort of iffy. And then Halls with the gargoyles. I
mean, if you get a plus 100% damage boost going into, was it Tarvold, that second boss? Like prideful, lust, 100% damage buff, like that boss dies.
Which is gone. Yeah, which is useful. I guess they are good in that regard. But for us, I just ran into like two or three times where they just completely bugged out. So
yeah. There are a couple in there that I would say are traps because of pets that walk around and will get you if you try to use the vials. But yeah. And then in Halls of Atonement, Venthyr can convert the gargoyles to your side, and the gargoyles scale with key level. And oh my god, dude, they slap.
Do a lot of damage. That's actually pretty useful.
So much damage.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are kind of useful. But I mean, nothing really. I mean, I guess with each one of these, there's always a pro to using them. So having somebody of that covenant in those keys is always kind of helpful. But like, yeah.
So yeah. I have a question.
Okay.
What does Necrolord do in dungeons?
Oh, okay. So I know this. There's banners.
I have no idea.
So in Theater of Pain, there are banners that you can.
Oh, there's the banners. Yeah. Okay.
So that's a damage buff. And in Plaguefall, it's there's apparently something you can. There's like slimes or something. Wait, I don't know. I just actually did Plaguefall last night, so I don't know. And I was the first one I did is Venthyr. Oh, there we go. Lincoln with the clutch assist. Apparently you can fleshcraft
on the slimes and it buffs your group. Got it.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you use flesh. Nope. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So actually, as Lincoln is saying this, I'm remembering that when you fleshcraft on top of mobs, you get more HP in your shield. Just realizing that now.
Yeah. Good to know since you're a Necrolord now.
Good to know since I'm the premier Necrolord. God, dude, I hate saying that zone.
The Mistweaver in my guild is Necrolord, but they actually main swapped to Resto Shaman for this tier. So I did keys with them like the first week on when they were Necrolord, and then they've been playing Resto Shaman. And I don't know what they are as Resto Shaman, but I haven't done a lot.
I'm assuming Necro, like Necro is sort
probably
of the
Necro
Resto
for
Shaman.
The whatever ability they've got. The
Primal
Surge. Yeah.
Which is very good. Very good. Interacts with their legendary. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the buffs are nice, but I haven't seen I know that this wasn't really like a Mythic Plus shower, but I mean, I know that there wasn't the fear of like, we're only going to take people who are this covenant to these dungeons.
You do see that to some degree. The ones that are more noticeably strong, people do, like if you try and do a 15, they'll be like, okay, we don't have anybody that's of the right covenant for this. We want to make sure we get that last one. Mm-hmm. Like if you try and do a Halls, people will look for a Venthyr. They won't necessarily only go Venthyr, but they will look for one. And so I've gotten whispers like, what covenant are you when applying for keys? And especially I think the ones where it pops up the most are Spires of Ascension and Necrotic Wake, because the buffs are so good there.
Yeah.
And not being a Kyrian, like one of the few non-Kyrian tanks in existence for the brief time that I wasn't.
You're Kyrian right now.
Yeah, I'm Kyrian right now. I definitely, like, I wasn't declined. It was just like they let me sit in the queue for a couple of minutes while they looked.
Gotcha. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, at least for me, I haven't seen that as much, but I also have pugged, I think, maybe a key a week since the start. So I have not done much.
I have not pugged very many keys.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
mostly
plus is keys. What it is. Yeah.
And also just a lack of keys. I did one key last week.
Same. I have yet to do a key this week on my monk.
Hey, and tell me, you want to do a key after this?
On my paladin. Oh, no. I'm done. I'm done. I get my two mythic choices this week, finally, because we got seven bosses down, and then I'll get some PvP choices, so I'm fine with like that. But yeah, no. I mean, Covenant-wise, they sort of, it's funny, I at least for Mistweaver, I'm surprised how the one thing I will say, I didn't really talk about this when we were going through it, but the one thing I will say is that Night Fae at least seems less used than I thought it was going to be from a Mistweaver perspective, just in terms of like actual parsed totally, things like that.
I'm going to be totally honest.
Yeah.
Night Fae seems like it would be extremely annoying to use as Mistweaver.
Yeah.
And that's probably a lot of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just in general as a sort of like an anecdotal, like, at least the questions that we got, like just basing on like questions we get in Discord and like looking at logs, like Night Fae just seemed a lot lower than I was expecting. I would have assumed it was much more of a like, maybe not a third, a third, a third in terms of it, but definitely closer than it is. I mean, and it's funny, Necrolord actually is probably the most used Mistweaver covenant at this point. So
I think, again, Kyrian is very clearly the one that most people went with for Brewmaster. But there are still very sizable contingents of Night Fae and Necrolord, especially Necrolord. There's a lot of Necrolord Brewmasters. Yeah. And both of those are still very good. Like I said, I did switch to Kyrian. I'll be switching back to Night Fae in a month when we get Nia fully unlocked.
We'll get your easy mission table back, so.
Yeah. Oh, that actually boozled me. I was going to be able to get my second rank 4 legendary this week. My Kyrian mission table still has level 60 Soul Ash missions.
Oh, nice. So it's because you might have a level, do you have like a level 30 or something? Or
I have a level 24 meatball.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. My meatball. Like every one of my other like guys on Necro.
My troops are level 11.
Yeah, my meatball, level 32. Fucking meatball, dude.
So, I can't do Soul Ash missions as Kyrian.
I still didn't. I never did one on my monk when I was Kyrian, so.
I know Kyrian, it's a lot harder, but I have absolutely no chance. Like, by the time I actually get to the point I could do the Soul Ash missions.
Yeah.
It's going to be over. I have the legendary already. Would you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so cool. So anything else on Covenants? This is kind of a short one, just sort of like a quick little recap, so.
I will say, a lot of the story elements and like the non-player power progression elements of Covenants, I've been really impressed with, really happy with. The Night Fae story, I will say again, a lot better than the Kyrian story.
Hold on. For the uninformed, what is the Night Fae story? Can you explain it?
Okay, so there's two main plot threads throughout it, and they kind of alternate. Okay. The first one is the plot thread where you're dealing with Tyrande, who is in the Shadowlands, because she jumped in at the very beginning of the expansion, if you remember that. And she's been running around the Maw, kicking ass and taking names, and losing her goddamn mind. And so we've been working with the Night Fae to keep her from going full crazy.
Oh,
and so there's been some stuff there, some further development of the Night Warrior kind of story, and then there's also, and honestly, this is maybe part of the reason why I think the Night Fae story is so much better. Buon Somdi is a major player in the Night Fae story.
Oh, Buon Somdi.
So we go through and help Buon Somdi get his mojo, basically.
That the mana storms were trying to steal or take, or there was a deal or something. Yes.
See,
all the lore ticks. So, like, I knew that.
But there's also some elements of that, like that ties into, if you remember going through the campaign the first time, there's the masked dudes in the Night Fae that are related. Of course, you had Azeroth Autopilot on, didn't you?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So they have masked dudes, and they're like, they have these masks on that basically mind controls them, and you can't take them off. Like, you take it off and they die. And those are related to the Muzala and the Loa of Death. And the other, like, Loa that we go through, and we actually, literally leading up to the other side, we go looking for Hakkar. End up going to the other side. I believe it actually is part of the quest for that, to go and do the other side. But it's just like, it's there's so much more going on, and more like, oh, this is actually an interesting story in its own right, not like the Kyrian one where, okay, this week the MacGuffin's in, spin the wheel, Revendreth.
Now, okay, so we talked about this. Hold on. It's the Kirin story is much more involved, right?
No, it's not.
So you have to. So what ends up happening is the Shah come back. So remember MOP? Maybe. I don't think you played that.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
So the Shah come back.
Yeah.
And they sort of like basically chest bump out of this like angel dude named, begins with an L, Lethandria. And then she goes crazy.
And maybe that's part of it, is the, I've just gotten to the point, I have the quest right now to go and deal with Lethandra.
Yeah, so like she chest bumps.
Maybe I haven't seen this part yet, but also at the same time, that's like chapter 7.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get any better. So like you just go and like, it's like one of those things where you deal with her and then like something happens. Yeah, Uther shows up at a certain point because Uther's like a bad angel. But yeah. Then what ends up happening is like Lethandra attacks.
But also for 9.2 or whatever, Kyrians are actually the bad guys.
Really? I hope so. No, but there's like the, I don't know, it's like the Shah attack. Yeah. Look, I don't know the story. It was, all I know is that like my friends, who most of them were Night Fae, would get upset trying to do their Covenant campaign on the Tuesday.
We do it after
the Maul. So it's like you already have like rank 4 or 5 Eye of the Jailer trying to do your Covenant campaign, which sends you into the Maul with rank 4 or 5 Eye of the Jailer. So I was like, I think we went to the Maul once.
I'm pretty sure like 90% of the WoW player base at level 60 is Night Fae.
Yeah.
Because that zone, even when the world boss is not up, is so incredibly laggy.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. We talked about this. It's like most beautiful zone. So.
And a lot of the classes do have good abilities from there. Even if they aren't numerically the best, they are the best. Like, best to play with. Especially if you're not reading.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know, like Lincoln's pointing out in chat that the Kyrian storyline is basically setting up Uther. And it's just like, I don't know, I feel like they wasted 6 of the chapters of the story where like the Night Fae had interesting things going on the whole time. And like there's still your go and collect 15 bear asses quests in there.
Yeah.
But there's interesting story through the whole thing, whereas like I literally did 3 campaign chapters and it was just okay, go and get the MacGuffin from Maldraxxus, from Revendreth, and from Ardenweald. And that was it.
Like, but you kill people.
Yeah, and that was like the Night Fae one was the highlight of it, because that was the one that actually, like, even though it was just, you know, a MacGuffin of the week, it was still interesting, and it was the only one that was like that, as far as I'm concerned. But it sounds like there are some more interesting story beats coming up in the Kyrian one. The Venthyr one, though, has also been pretty good. There's a couple of duds.
Yeah, I've been doing Venthyr on my Paladin. It's like Sun King or like Kale is back or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's
I think I some just finished it,
ones earlier on, but then you get to like, spoiler, Maldraxxus stuff happening. And it's like, oh, okay, this is actually interesting. This is around the time that you start going around with Kale.
Oh, wait, that's right. There was some, like, again, I should really listen to the story.
And they name drop Kel'Thuzad.
Oh, like, wait, you get to kill him. You fight him. Oh, shit, sorry.
That's okay. I haven't done my coming in up campaign on my
sorry. Battle. Oh, spoilers. Okay.
I was hoping he would be a raid boss. I mean, it's Kel'Thuzad. He's probably still going to be a raid boss at some point, but.
Yeah. Fuck. My bad. But yeah, I mean, yeah, story-wise, it's weird. I think like the legendary, like it sort of reminds me a little bit of like Legion in the way they did like the legendary storylines with each individual one, where as you unlocked more and more artifact power, you gain like, or you saw like more of a story or like more of like, you know, utilizing that side of things. But
yeah, I do think that the choice to restrict it from 12 in Legion to 4 in Shadowlands definitely upped the quality. Like, yeah. Even the Kyrian one, which I am not a fan of, is still better than the Hunter class campaign.
Yeah.
Like, by a lot. Like, the Hunter class campaign literally just had you set up. It had a couple of high points, like recruiting Rexxar was cool. But it also just, like, ended with you killing a no-name demon in an easy boss fight in the Violet Hold.
Well, yeah. No, they definitely upped it from then, so it's been cool to go through that, but well, I guess we'll see more. I mean, it'd be interesting to see where they take the story from here. Because I hope the one thing, well, the one thing I want to ward against, which sort of scares me in terms of like bringing Uther back, particularly for Kyrian, is that if there is ever a tie-in into like the Lich King and Arthas, and like we've already seen it in the shorts, like there's that, there's going to be something with him. Yeah, like if you're Kyrian,
we're totally getting hints.
Yeah. If you're Kyrian, you will understand what Uther is much better than if you played any of the other covenants, I feel like.
Yeah. Like Uther's the Uldir kind of thing where the Horde players knew what was going on in Uldir and Alliance players just like had no clue why they were there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, yeah, similar like Kael being a boss in Revendreth and like actually being able to interact with Kael as Venthyr has been, as much as I don't pay attention to the story, there are certain things I will pick up on. And yeah, there's been some, it's, yeah. I just hope it doesn't end up being a, like Uther being a major player, because I think he deserves a better introduction to the other covenants than just, oh, Uther showed up, right? Like, you know what I mean? Or like, hey, Uther was in that short 6 months ago that you saw at the beginning of the expansion when they explained what Bastion was. And now, oh, he's a major player. Like, they need some sort of like in between. So, Uther, I think, is an easy point to do it. But I mean, even if like Lich King, or sorry, Kel'Thuzad is a larger point towards the end here. Not the end, but towards the next sort of patch content, story content. It would suck for non-Venthyrs because he'll just like show up. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes though. So any other covenant stuff? I mean, we've both literally changed from what we originally thought we were going to be. Like
baseless speculation about what will change in 9.1. But we can save that for a little bit closer to 9.1.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't care.
It would be guessing. We would be
guessing, throwing at dartboards. Yeah, we fight about that for a little bit. So cool. I think that is it for at least our initial topic today. And now we get into my favorite part of the show: questions and answers. So every week we go and pick up your questions that you send us and we answer them here on air on the podcast, live on the stream. So if you do have any questions, you can send it to Emelson or myself through Discord, Twitter. I mean, if you know my address, you can mail me a question. Also, if you know my address, that's a little weird.
Please.
So we only got one question this week, but it's actually a pretty interesting one
that I didn't put in the, because I got it during the show.
What? I am the question person, Emelson. I need to know. I'm just kidding. We apparently have two questions today.
If Twitch chat wants to ask questions as well, I'll throw that out there. We will totally take questions from chat during this.
That's true. I should also say that you can, now that we've gotten this live streaming thing working a little better, we'll take questions from chat. So first up is Soji, my boy, #delete SEF. Soji asks really good questions, actually. They ask, if you were to redesign the Covenant abilities for your specs, how would you do it? Feel free to ignore the repercussions of and how it would affect other specs. Just assume it was completely spec specific or something. It only has to be cool and thematic. So, Emelson, what covenant would you choose and what would you redesign their ability to be?
Okay, so the only two I actually think I would really redesign would be the Venthyr one and the Kyrian one. I like Feyline Stomp. It could use with some improvements, but it's pretty good. Bone Dust Brew, same story, pretty good. Especially I like its interaction with the existing brew toolkit. It's good. Venthyr, though, the existing one would just go away. There would not fall in order. Doesn't make any sense. And no, none of it. As for what would be in its place, that's harder to say. I would probably say something along the lines of I don't know, just go full vampire, have it literally be, you know, draining the enemy, like just give you an attack, like, so they've got the which of them in there's some of the enemies in Revendreth have claws, like, yeah. Basically do that, and that's the Covenant ability. You hit, okay, that you strike with those claws, it does a health drain, and you know, maybe it's rotational, maybe it's a cooldown and you have it up for the duration, you know, something like that. I think would be a lot better.
Gotcha.
And it fits in with the kind of martial arts thing, because like brewmasters and windwalkers basically don't use their weapons anyway, so
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you can totally do that. And then for Kyrian, I would throw away Weapons of Order as well. Just throw it away.
Okay.
As for what to replace it with, I'm not going to lie, I have no idea what I would replace it with for Kyrian. Like, there's just, I don't know.
Okay. I mean, the Venthyr one sounds interesting, at least. So like a health drain, DPS cooldown. For Mistweavers, I would probably also replace Fallen Order of Venthyr. But I would generally redesign something in terms of a... So Venthyr is very much a like anima-focused vampire sort of covenant. So from a thematic perspective, I'd probably do something around like you pull in anima from your surroundings and sort of buff something on yourself. So sort of like a cooldown that very much, yeah, probably in the vein of like Thunder Focus T in terms of like a Mistweaver usage, right? On something that you basically hit and it buffs like your next ability or next set of abilities. That's based really on like the anima around you. Yeah, it's pretty, I guess, like, I mean, thematically it probably makes sense. It's less exciting because it's very much just like a...
But I mean, even like you could do something in the vein of what I was talking about, where instead of, yeah, it being a health drain, like as you are in combat, it like drains anima from things that you hit. And then for Mistweaver, it does it differently. Like it, yeah, drains anima from people you heal.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can leverage that and to like buff something else. So.
Bar, right? And when the bar is full, you can use it.
Yeah.
And it's like a big like limit break kind of ability. That would be cool.
Yeah. So that might be it. That would probably be what I would. I mean, I don't, Venthyr would be the only one I think I'd spend some time on actually redesigning and doing it. And I think that would be cool to have like a rotational. I'm always a big fan of like builder spender type gameplay, even around healers. Like I've been playing a lot of Holy Paladin lately. Love Holy Power. Just in terms of like the way it's used, so
really well.
Yeah. So I mean, I'd do something like that, I think. So
I would probably, you know, maybe I wouldn't entirely throw out Weapons of Order for Brewmaster. I would, mm-hmm, maybe go in a direction that is more like the Windwalker version of it, where instead of it being just a mastery steroid and flat damage increase, it's like, okay, you know, Blackout Kick decreases the cooldown of your Bruise and Keg Smash,
mm-hmm, yeah,
for the duration, and then Keg Smash, you know, gives extra Bruise EDR and does more damage, you know, something like that, where it's giving you that same kind of ability steroid where you can press a lot more buttons during that Weapons of Order window instead of just like pressing the button and having nothing change about, yeah, what you're doing in the next 30, yeah, seconds.
That makes sense. Cool. Well, I'm sorry, I was going to say, well, so, thank you for the question, Soji. I think we got some really good ideas. I'll get Ian on the line. We'll get those in for probably 9-2-ish, we'll say at this point. So you're welcome.
Here's a question before Lincoln's got one in chat that I think is really good. Yeah. But before we get to that, what do you think the odds are that we see Soulbind or Covenant abilities completely remade in 9.1?
Zero?
For
monks.
Like I could see Fallen Order getting completely remade. The ones that nobody is taking. Think about it. There's everything about the Covenant is class agnostic except for your Covenant ability and the one conduit that goes with it. If yeah. they're replacing it, there's not actually that much that needs changing. It's just that one spell, which, again, making a good spell is hard when you're doing it for so many specs.
Yep.
What do you...
I don't know if we see a full redesign. If only because, like, the mechanics of what that means in terms of, like, re-rolling, I think are a little bit too much for Blizzard to figure out in terms of an individual patch. Like, because in my mind, it, like, if they get a full redesign, that's great. But now, where's the compensation for someone that wants to then move into that covenant, right? Like, is it for the first time you become Venthyr, you get, like...
Re-roll stuff. So we can just switch to a new one.
I mean, they reset it, but then you still, at that point, you have, like, all that renowned, all that anima, like...
No, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's fair. I mean, the anima stuff, the anima upgrades, I think, are going to eventually be, like, the bigger deal.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, the anima grind, like, you can clear the map with world quests, do a bunch, like, you can get, you know, 1,800 anima a day at least, right? But it's just a slog. It's a slog through it. So, yeah, I don't think we see a full redesign. I think the best we get are numerical changes.
Yeah, maybe. So,
yeah.
I mean, they would have to completely overtune Fallen Order for Brewmasters to use it. Like, it would have to be a truly disgusting amount of damage.
Yeah.
Well, I say that, but we've got this question from Lincoln in chat. Thanks for this question. I'm gonna field this one. What do you think about all tanks eventually going Venthyr? Because Draven is such a strong defensive soulbind. So I'm going to pull up Draven real quick. The Brewmaster guide, because I talked about this on there, about how good Draven was.
You're going to hold your ground on this one? At how good he is?
So let me read what I wrote. While Draven offers less potential damage than either of the other Venthyr soulbinds, this tree comes with hands down the best defensive trait we have access to, Service in Stone, which is damage taken below 40% health is reduced by 10%. And then on death, there's an AoE thing that happens, which, like, ideally you don't die, but, you know, it's something, I guess. And then there's also good soul binds at the end of the tree, like Built for War, that gives you a stacking primary stat buff while you are high health, it stacks up while you're over 80%, but you don't lose it until you drop below 50%. So the fact that it stacks really quickly and 50% HP, while you will lose it some, especially while actively tanking, you're going to have better uptime on it than you probably expect to.
Gotcha.
So Draven on the whole is actually a really good soulbind. Like, really, really good. So, do I think tanks are going to swap en masse to Venthyr in order to use this soulbind? And I would say no, unless the Covenant ability is good. Prop Paladins, yeah. Once Draven comes out and people start seeing how good Draven is, I would not be surprised to see a lot of Prop Paladins switch from Kyrian to Venthyr. Because, Ashen Hallow is already extremely good. It's more damage in raid. It is very good in Mythic Plus as just like, I'm going to use it on this pack and we're going to delete it. I would say, overall, worse, but in specific scenarios, better in Mythic Plus than Kyrian for Prop Paladin, from what I understand. My Prop Paladin's never been Kyrian, so I can't say, but I do miss the big AoE shields every minute or whatever. There's also a 4% increase healing received on Draven. Like, Draven's just, like, really good defensively. But, like, for Monk, I don't think you will. I think that Weapons of Order, Feyline Stomp, Bone Dust Brew, all of them are too good to give up compared to Feyline Stomp. It's just, or Fallen Order, it's just too far behind. Fallen Order is, like, or Venthyr, is, like, 10% DPS behind, 8% DPS behind. It's just too much to give up in order to get this soulbind. And Brewmaster's not the, like, cockroach that it was in BFA and Legion either. Brewmasters are pretty vulnerable right now, and you will die. But I still don't think that Draven is good enough. There are less good defensive effects on other trees, like Pelagos giving mastery, which is extremely good for Brewmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Nia's got her max HP thing, which is, you know, not great, but it actually gives a lot. So there are other things from the other covenants that are good. They are not Draven good, but yeah, basically I think it boils down to, if you have a good covenant ability for Venthyr, then yeah, once Draven's unlocked, you probably seriously look at it. Which Draven unlocks most of the way this week, because he unlocks with the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two rows, as we, you know, hit up to Renown 30, you'll get those rows.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. I think it's going to depend. But yeah, I would not be surprised to see a bunch of tanks go Venthyr in the next, like, 4 weeks.
Yep. Interesting. Cool.
So I have another question, actually.
Oh, excellent. Also from
Lincoln, this one from Discord, not Twitch chat. Relating to WoW Analyzer, actually. And he asked me this in a private chat, but I wanted to answer it here because I thought it was relevant to our discussion.
Okay.
Are you getting a cut of the WoW Analyzer paywall? And we sort of answered this earlier when we clarified, yep. Like, if you maintain a spec, it pays your WoW sub. Beyond that, I don't know yet, because of how Zero went about this, where he kind of introduced it without having a lot of time for us to figure out the details. I don't know what the revenue sharing is going to look like. He did mention possibly trying to hit the point that someone could be like paid part-time to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any insight into the financials of WoW Analyzer and any of that. I do know that the site isn't like massively negative. Like, it's not like it needed the money necessarily to stay online, but I don't know more than that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, monetary wise, like, yeah, we did mention it. Like, it pays. If you maintain a spec, you're considered a spec maintainer, you get your WoW sub paid for. So it's at least, you know, the 15 a month. But yeah, beyond that, the rest of the money essentially goes to one of two places, right? Server costs. And then Zero did do a thing where if there are larger bugs or larger features, or really larger bugs that are in it, we did use bug bounties.
$100 bounty on getting Arms Warrior implemented.
Yeah. So there's certain bounties around implementing certain features. I mean, there was a big one around like our caching system, right? Wasn't there at one point? Where it was caching, or it was something weird in terms of like,
I think I know which one you're talking about, where it was like doing comparisons across logs by like storing the data from the analysis on the server. I don't know. It was a really big one, and
I don't think anybody picked it up.
I thought about it. I have some initial design work that I did for it, but it's just such a big feature and so time intensive to work on.
I didn't continue
with it.
Yeah, so I mean, at least, I mean, to be fair, like, it's not like maintainers don't get anything from that. It doesn't all go to Zero. There is some payouts beyond just him, you know, paying for server costs and his time. So, but it's not like it's the $15, basically.
I don't know how or if that is changing with the addition of the paywall.
Basically. Yeah, I mean, I would assume that part doesn't change, at least at a minimum, so. We sort of talked about that earlier, got our thoughts out there. Not exactly happy about it, but we'll see. So cool. I think that is it for questions. We got our first Twitch chat question in today. It's always great. So if you guys,
it's technically the second, but we'll go with it.
Okay. Well, we'll celebrate
previously.
Oh yeah, we did when she asked they asked those. I'm assuming, sorry, Kate's like a girl's name. I didn't mean to assume. But when they asked those, the lore questions, which I nailed, dude, 100%.
100%.
We gotta actually put together that like Anam explains a lore thing, and like we have to like blindly bring it up to me, and I'll be like, all right, this is what I think it is, and then we can like say what it actually was. That'd be a pretty good episode.
Yep.
Oh, So yeah, so cool. But I think that's it. So, you know, Soji, Lincoln, thank you very much for the questions. And as always, if you guys have other ones, you can send it to us in Discord. Like I said, Twitter, on live air, we read Twitch chat. So, yeah.
I'm not reading Twitter during the podcast, but if you want to reach out before the podcast in Discord or on Twitter, I will get your question in here.
Nice. Nice. So yeah, I think that's it.
I think that is about going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you all for watching, for listening to this episode of the Beaker Serenity podcast. It's been a lot of fun to do these. And if you have enjoyed them and you'd like to support us and the work that we do over at the Beaker Serenity, whether it's our Covenant guides or stuff like Kiov's dungeon guides and raid guides or the overall spec guides, and of course, podcast. You can do that over at patreon.com/Beak of Serenity. And as always, you know, you don't need to contribute financially, though we do appreciate it. If you just want to come and hang out in Discord and have a good time and help answer questions, that's fantastic. And we will absolutely take it.
100%.
So yeah. Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.